Now, to many, this is a natural organization that the Athenians would apparently set up. This was different from the Peloponnesian League, where apparently the Spartans decided, and then they went before their allies, and their allies had their own meeting. Athens met with all the other members. Well, it seems to sound great, except the fact that most of those states had no navies, completely dependent on Athens, and in any kind of voting situation, there was always the implied threat for most of these states that if Athens was not appeased, they could be in trouble. And if you're living on a rock in the Aegean and you don't have any ships, you're not about to go against the Athenians in a league assembly. If they had really wanted to protect themselves, they would have set up a constitution more along the lines of the federal organizations that come out of the Middle Ages in Europe, in which there would have been group voting, proportional voting, there would have been some kind of rule of a two-thirds majority. But being a simple one-state, one-vote, open assembly meant the Athenians from the start could dominate it. And those six or seven powerful states lacked the votes and the means constitutionally to block Athenian will. Now, at the time when Aristides drew this constitution up, no one objected. And far from it. The Ionians swore very serious oaths to obey these treaties, these terms. And the oaths included taking lumps of iron and casting them over the ships and into the sea and swearing when the lumps of iron float up once again to the sea, then our oaths are absolved. This is serious stuff in the Greek world. And these oaths really meant something. And the Athenians are going to hold these Ionians to it as the years go by. So as a result of a bizarre set of circumstances, the ineptitude and mistakes of the two leading Spartan figures and the adroit measures of Aristides and the fears of the Ionians, the Athenians in 477 BC, 2 years after the victory of over Xerxes, are now in charge of a naval league, a league that includes the various members of Ionia and the islands, various city-states that have rebelled from Persia, who recognize Athens as their leader. This was by no means intended, no means predicted. Athens was now at the head of a league, the second interstate political league in the Greek world. It's new, it's different, it's a naval, it's based on a different economic axis, but the Spartans all of a sudden found themselves facing not just an Athens with a powerful fleet, but now an Athens with an alliance structure and a position as a hegemon, which none of them had ever anticipated. That fact alone could have led to a war with Athens immediately. Added to the fact that Athens was being led by a man called Themistocles, a Democrat, and many Spartans had very dubious attitudes about him, and the Corinthians just didn't like him, given some of the disputes they had before the Battle of Salamis. So the organization of this Delian League would suggest that a war would be immediately in the cards for the Athenians and the Spartans, that Thucydides' position is quite right about this, that the Spartans could not brook any kind of rival, and yet it did not happen at all. And that is because of a second individual in Athens, a man who's going to be the subject of the next talk. His name is Cimon. He was the son of Miltiades, the victor at Marathon. And in my opinion, if Aristides was the adroit diplomat who organized the Delian League, made it palatable to the Ionians, set in place the foundations for the fiscal and military power of the Athenian Empire, it was Cimon who would be elected general repeatedly for the next 16 years, who made that new alliance and Athens acceptable, even more than acceptable to the Spartans and the Peloponnesians, and in many ways stands as one of the great political figures of Athens, who is often underestimated, but in the end has as much claim to being the architect of the Athenian Empire and the Athenian democracy as Pericles.